We are back. It's Thursday, March 28th, 2024. Hold on a second. Don't turn off my Alexa, right? Is this thing on? Why is my Alexa still playing when I'm speaking? This is Futures Power Hour. I'm your host, Chris Vecchio. He's Anton Kulikov. Anton, it's a snoozer of a day in these markets. The S&P unchanged. The Dow unchanged. It's the day before Good Friday. We're going into a three-day weekend. Everyone seems quite content to sit on their hands in what's a very typical low volume week. It's the lowest volume week of this year so far, and that's typically the case. It's the lowest volume week basically since Christmas and New Year, so not much has changed here as we look at these broader indexes.
So, you know, you were just telling me, you know, how whenever you have these days, you kind of feel antsy, you know, there's nothing to do. And I agree. And, you know, this morning, I don't usually do this on Trades from Research, but if you watch Trades from Research, I put on a zero DTE in SPX because there was nothing to do. And I was trying to call Tom just to ask him how his position was doing, because obviously, you know, I know how his position is doing because I'm the one who gave it to him. But I just wanted him to say it. He didn't pick up the phone. So that was unfortunate. But realistically, this is the best type of strategy for a day like this. And this is why we talked about this on the show a couple of days ago, because realistically, in a market environment where volatility is, you know, I would even say below record lows, not that that's literally possible, but in the sense that this is an atypical week. You can't really compare this type of week to normal market weeks. So, you know, you were kind of trading in a, you know, sub, if you take like a random week of the year, this period today is probably going to be even lower than that. So,
yeah,
what do you do on days like this? Zero DT iron flies. And it seems like that's been working so far. Although I will say that premium is coming out of there a lot slower than I would have anticipated. In other words, the volatility that was priced in early in the day is only down by, or I'm sorry, the expected move, the zero DT iron condor was about 1350 at 9:30 this morning. It's only trading at 11, despite the market being exactly unchanged, which means that all the premium is expected to come out basically in the last hour or so of the day. Which
do you think that's because of a recency bias in this market, where Friday, Monday, Tuesday, you saw big moves lower in the last hour of the day, and then yesterday, of course, you see that big ripping rally in the last 40 minutes of the day?
100%. 100%. The market, they're starting to price this thing. You know, there was a time a couple months ago, where, you know, you would have those late in the day moves, and they would happen, and I did the math on this, roughly once every 10 to 15 trading days. Mm-hmm. But if you had those out, if you had those moves, you could buy an option in the SPX about 10 points away from at the money 30 minutes before the close. And you could see that option increase by 10, 15, 25x even on those days. Now, think about it. If you have that happen once every 10 trading days and that option returns 25x, they got to pump that vol and keep it there. Because otherwise, you could just buy options on the close and make 25x. Happens 10% of the time, but if you're returning 20 or 25 or even 10 on your money, you don't need it to happen more often. That's break even. And that's what's been happening. Volatility has been staying more bid later in the day in order to hedge against those type of moves. So, you know, and we're seeing that play out with these strategies. That doesn't mean they're not profitable. It just takes a little bit longer to get there.
Anton, today we're going to be focusing on how to trade around the holiday weekend here. You know, I think it's important to think about what risk is coming up around the corner, because tomorrow is not just simply a day when the market's closed. Fed Chair Powell will be speaking. You're going to have the US PCE index release. And so if you're in the window with which it's time to think about perhaps winding down positions or rolling them, it may be prudent that today's the day that you simply close it out and look to put it back on Monday. I have several things that are in that 21, 22, 23 days expiration range. And so it's a decision time for me. We're going to walk through how I plan on approaching, say, the S&P and the NASDAQ versus the Russell, given the different durations there. But before we get there, we haven't checked in on these this week. Let's talk about what's going on with the CME FedWatch odds. We heard from Governor Christopher Waller overnight, Fed Governor Christopher Waller, that he thinks that the rate cuts being priced in by the market are too soon, that the market needs to push them out further. They're going to get fewer this year, and they're going to start later than the market anticipates, simply because the data has been better than expected in many cases. And also, inflation's been a little bit stickier, something that, you know, we've started to raise some concern around here in recent weeks, particularly given how commodity prices have begun to move and looks like they're bottoming more broadly speaking. What we see here after Waller's comments overnight is that rate cut odds for the month of June ultimately do drop. Yesterday, we were talking about a 70.1% chance of a 25 basis point rate cut in June. Today, that's closer to 64.2%. That's a small but meaningful shift. And if you look to what happens in bonds, particularly at the short end of the curve, even where we are right now, yields are higher. The long end of the curve is a different story. ZB and UB are holding up quite well, actually, and they've led the rebound here over the course of the session. Bonds have traded up from their overnight lows. But it's the short end of the curve, the policy-sensitive part of the curve, that's still underwater right now. And you could see that it's reflected here in these cut odds. So this may be something that we hear tomorrow, which is why there's so much risk heading into this weekend. I know when you look to the options chain, Anton, the market's basically saying tomorrow doesn't matter. Look at where the expected move is for the S&P through Monday's close. You wouldn't know that something's expected to happen tomorrow. But I think it's because of that low bar, it's going to be potentially easy to clear. Europe and parts of Europe will be open. So when we have the US inflation report, when we have Fed Chair Powell's speech, you're going to be able to look to the German DAX or the French CAC or the UK FTSE for some sort of proximal gauge of risk appetite around these events. And in thin markets, that could lead to what is ultimately then a gap open higher or lower on Sunday, simply because of the illiquid conditions. And because this is a market that's now starting to be geared towards the Fed telling us on one hand, yeah, we're probably going to need to, you know, continue to lower rates, as Powell himself has said at the last FOMC meeting. But on the other hand, there's also those Fed officials who are telling us that inflation is becoming more of an issue and it may give them pause. And that's not a good place. I mean, that's good for risk assets. That's inflationary. Real rates drop as inflation expectations climb, as realized inflation climbs and the Fed keeps rates where they are or lower, even if they just keep them there for a longer time, real rates will fall then, in effect. And that is good for stocks. That's good for gold. That's good for crypto. But it's a risk that we have to think about for tomorrow and for this weekend. Do you think that the market is underpricing this, or am I just too deep in the macro weeds where I can't really tell the forest from the trees here? And just because it's something related to the Fed and inflation, and there's a Fed Chair Powell speech, I am just biased and conditioned to think that it matters more than what the market actually suggests it is.
I mean, that's objectively true, right? The market does not value it as much, clearly, because the way you, I mean, the only objective way to look at that is the options market. So you are right. You have your answer there, right? So honestly, okay, here's the thing. That answer, I think, is the same, or that question, I think, is the same exact question as to why has the market decided that this time, this year, the last 12 months, the average expected move for the day of the Fed announcement was, you know, 30 to 40 points, whereas back in 2022, it was 80 points. Why? I mean, yeah, you could say, well, of course, we saw more volatility back in 2022, so therefore they're expecting more volatility. Okay, but it was 80 points for a reason. It wasn't 120, it wasn't 60, it was 80. That's the way the market priced it. Today, they're pricing these Fed announcements at roughly 40 points. Now, granted, yes, volatility is over. Why 40? Why not 20? Why not 30? Again, it sometimes, you know, when we see a number that makes sense to us, we're like, oh, okay, yeah, then they're pricing this. This makes sense. It's correct. But sometimes we conflate, you know, it being correct because we think it's correct. The market thinks it's not going to be that important. So therefore, again, If I was able to be right on guessing price direction more times than I was wrong, then okay, maybe the market is actually wrong and mispricing something. But realistically, over time, it's about exactly what you'd expect. What the market prices is exactly what you'd expect over time. So because of that, I think maybe you're reading into it a little bit too much. But again, it's. We won't know until after the fact. And realistically, think of it this way. If the market doesn't do anything by Monday, then it's easy to say, oh, well, that Friday reading was exactly spot on. That makes sense because the market prices efficiently. If we have a huge move on Monday, it's very easy to say, well, of course, the market was pricing it under. How could it possibly have been pricing it so under? We had a huge move outside the expected move. But like, whichever way happens, like we're aware, there's already a way we interpret that after the fact. So before it, I think you just have to go with what the market gives you, because you realistically, you can't take any other side. Like if you really believe that, then you should be going on buying premium, right? But if you're not, then obviously you believe what the market's saying as much as I do. Because realistically, it's the incremental dollar at risk that determines the price. And, you know, if you're not willing to take the other side, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think you can say anything except for the fact that whatever the market's saying is the absolute right answer at this moment.
That's true. I mean, I think part of my issue right now is I'm lacking conviction. So do I have conviction to keep the trades on through the weekend? No. Do I have conviction to say that I should be, yeah, like, you know, should I be buying a strangle? Or buying a straddle, rather. Buying a
strangle. Would you like to buy a strangle, Chris?
But, you know, but this, like, you know, if the expectation is the market's underpricing this risk, then you should be buying vol. Effectively.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's the risk, it's the right risk reward. That would be your answer, right?
Right. And perhaps that's the short-term trade. Let's talk about this market being led by the Russell, though. 5308 here on the S&P 500. That is exactly unchanged. The Dow Jones is off by 0.01%, 40,138. The NASDAQ a little bit softer, down by 0.2%, 18,467 and a quarter. The Russell, again, the leader to the upside, higher by 0.50%, 2149. Kind of a deja vu for yesterday as well, where right around this time, you saw that markets were basically mixed, but the Russell was far ahead of everything else. And that rally was sustained into the end of the day. And then, Anton, you did something absolutely miraculous at 3:20 p.m. Eastern yesterday, which I think for the sake of this conversation and the lack of movement, we should be vamping here a little bit to fill the time. Let's talk about what happened at 3:20 yesterday on our charts, Anton.
Do you have an actual chart? No way.
Oh, I'm going to be bringing up this chart. Yes, I think it's important to bring up the chart, because yesterday at 3:20, when the S&P 500 was at 5277, just 2 points off of its most recent low, Anton told me that I had jinxed the market from going up. And he sent me a screenshot of me saying that the market was going to go up.
Which was exactly right in the beginning of your chart at an hour before at 2:28.
Which,
2:28.
Yeah, in fairness, yeah, it was. It was at a relative swing high over the previous hour as well. But then the market goes up, right? And that's kind of where we are today. I bring that up not only to review lightly, but to point out here that you have a day where the market does nothing but chop around and grind and grind, and the Russell's leading. And all of a sudden, at the end of the day, people pile in long and they follow the direction that the Russell's moving, broadly speaking. And today, it is a thinner market. I mean, when we look at here, we're looking at 597,000 contracts traded. We're at 1:17 p.m. I mean, the days earlier this week when we were complaining about it being a fairly lightly traded market, we were still north of 600,000-700,000 contracts by the time Futures Power Hour started. So this is a thin market. This is another market where if we see things continue to chop right and move sideways into the end of the day and the Russell's still up by 0.5%, by 0.75%, you can't dismiss price action like what you saw at the end of the day yesterday. People try to just bang up the markets into the close, not just for the week or the month, but for the quarter, painting the tape a little bit here, right? There has been some rotation this week, Anton. The NASDAQ hasn't gone anywhere, but the Russell has continued to extend gains. So that kind of seems like, and if you look at it on a sector performance, the sectors that have done really, really well up into this week are the ones that are lagging, and the ones that have been lagging are the ones that are doing a little bit better. So it feels like there's some capital rotation and reallocation at play at the end of the quarter, which is fairly typical. I don't think that's enough evidence to suggest just because the rally is stalling here on the day before Good Friday that there's really anything to be concerned about per se, being agnostic to the economic calendar for tomorrow. But there's really nothing to be worried about, technically speaking, heading into next week this far. You can't take a slowdown or lack of momentum in a broader uptrend around a holiday week as a sign that the market is ready to say it's tiring out. Because quite frankly, yesterday was an all-time closing high. And if we're just a point higher from where we are right now, it's another new all-time closing high, even if it's not a new absolute high.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I agree with you. I don't think, honestly, I don't think you can read anything into this whatsoever, like zero. If this has been no different than yesterday and the day before in terms of the lower volatility, actually today has been least volatile, but in terms of the actual price action intraday, it's been kind of like a shrunken down version of yesterday, which if was possible is, you know, lower volatility, even less than yesterday. But again, this is not surprising. There have been many times in the past, especially when volatility gets this low, that this is what we see. And we can see this, and you know, this is not to make anybody upset. I think sometimes it does make people upset. It's that you could see this going for another 6 months, a year. This is not like a lot of people, and you know, our research sometimes, you know, we try to present the best facts we can on our research, right? But everybody who reads our research piece will have some sort of different or some unique takeaway of their own that we never put in there. And I think one of the hallmark alternative takeaways that I think people develop for themselves from our research is that, well, if volatility gets this low, then it's only a matter of time before it pops. So therefore, I'm going to go short the market. I'm going to buy puts. I'm going to sell VIX puts. I'm going to buy the VIX. But the one thing that we try to keep emphasizing is that it is only a matter of time. But that matter of time could be a week, could be a month, could be a year, could be 3 years, all with equal likelihood. So, you know, as a trader with a limited account size, you have to ask yourself, okay, knowing that even the volatility is at all-time lows, are you willing to jump the gun and, you know, try to catch the next 2020 or 2022? Or are you going to stick on the side that makes statistical sense and understand that 70% of the time we're in a bull market? We just came out of a bear market.
Two bear markets in 4 years.
We just, and I say this again to people, we just came out. A lot of people will throw rocks at me when I said we just came out of a bear market 4 months ago.
You and I are on the same page here. Everyone says 27% over the past 21 weeks. And I would say 8% over the past 2 years. The market has not gone anywhere for 2 years. Right. That's a significant, you know, traders are very narrow-minded. We think about what's happened recently. Most of the market is not comprised of traders. Most of the market is comprised of long-only investors, pension funds, retirement funds, people who are saving. And they look at their 401k and they say, and if they haven't changed their allocation at all, if they've just been long SPY, they see that from where they were 2 years ago, they're up now maybe 10% over 2 years. Stocks are supposed to give a return historically of about 8% annualized. Over the past decade in the 2010s, it was double digits. So if you now look at this and you go, oh, I've just achieved a 5% compounded annualized rate of return over the past 2 years, do you feel like you're in underinvested or overinvested in the market? Is your attitude that the market's gone up too quickly since October, or has it really done nothing since January 2022 or November 2021?
Yeah, I mean, that's how my dad is. My dad's a perfect example of that. You know, I mean, I come home, you know, and I was coming, you know, giving him a call in November, December, January. I'm like, oh my gosh, another great month. And then he would tell me, yeah, I'm almost back to my all-time high in my retirement account. I'm
exactly.
Like, right, that's right, because he's not... And that comprises 95% of most people. So that even that mindset is easy for me to slip up on, because I every single day I stare at a screen and see what I can do today, what I can do for the next week, what I can do for the next month. Whereas people like my dad and everybody else, most people are saying, what's my portfolio done over the last year, 2 years, 5 years? And realistically speaking, right, if you know, if you look back at the chart of 2008 and 2009, right, and you say the sell-off ended March of 2009, are you going to tell me that by July of 2009, that even though the market was, I don't know how much it's been up from March 2009 to July 2009, but let's say it was up, whatever, above average, because you're coming off of a 55% sell-off. So would people in July of 2009, if you're looking at that chart back, would you be like, oh my gosh, we need to sell now? Or you know, now granted, it was a larger sell-off. We still hadn't gone back to all-time highs. But again, it's the speed of the market that matters more than the actual price of the market where it is right now. And realistically, if you're talking about the same speed of recovery from 2008 that we're having now, or even faster or slower, it doesn't matter. But like, in July 2009, people weren't saying, oh my gosh, we're up like X percent, you know, or even 2011. Fine, let's go 2010, you know. Like, we still had another 8 years to go. I'm sorry, no, 2010, another 10 years to go before we saw another big correction. You know what I mean? So I'm not saying this is going to be the same thing. I'm just saying, you know, if in retrospect, if you look at 2008 as a cursor, like, you know, nobody would have been like, oh, shoot, new all-time high, 2013, time to sell. I mean, maybe some people did that, and then you missed out on 7 years of gains looking for a place to get back in.
It remains an uptrend. The uptrend may be pausing here. The NASDAQ hasn't gone anywhere for the better part of last month. I would say that if we are able to finish up the quarter where we are, right around a 10% gain for the quarter, that's a pretty good start for the year. And I think that's the kind of start to the year when you look at the statistics that tell us that there's probably still more good times ahead. Most of the time when the market's up by 10% in the first quarter, April's good, the second quarter's good, the rest of the year produces a double-digit gain. No two ways about it. And we actually just ended a unique stretch where we just did the November, December, January, February, and very likely, depending upon how today closes, March, 5 months in a row, which then skews towards an even more positive outcome for April, which is already one of the best months of the year for stocks over the past 10 and 20 years. If you're looking at the S&P or the NASDAQ, over the past 20 years, it's either the first or second best month of the year for the S&P and the NASDAQ, depending upon which one you're looking at. So right now, we're going to have to see something happen with those Fed cut odds, I think, dip below 50%. Scare us out of July. July is the place where the market probably slows down and says, okay, they were kind of dancing on knife's edge, because you get through July and then September's off the board before the election. Then you only have November and December, and you can't feasibly fit in three rate cuts into two meetings unless you're doing it in 50 basis point intervals. And then that probably means something's really bad in the economy if the Fed's cutting that quickly. So it's not really logical to be bullish if you think that the market's going to squeeze 75 basis points of rate cuts through two meetings. But until we cross that Rubicon, you know, S&P right now, NASDAQ, they're still holding up here. The Russell actually moves up to a fresh yearly high here today. We have backed off a little bit. We've cut the gains over the course of the session in half, but 2148.4 right now, vol here at 37.0. There were some people remarking that we hadn't necessarily cleared out the recent high, even though we had a very big day up yesterday. Now we've moved through the high for the year. If we close it here, it's going to be a fresh closing high for the year as well. The longer term charts remain bullish. This is one of the few places, if you're looking at the indexes, where selling puts still makes sense if you're trying to express a bullish bias. Anton, this is perhaps the difference between what I have going on in ES and in RTY, because we talk about how to trade around the Easter weekend. In ES for me, and maybe other people are in the same boat here, but I have 22 days to expiration. Tomorrow would be the day that I would think about rolling this out. In light of the fact that I don't have the ability to do so tomorrow, and we do have this PCE risk and the PAL risk coming up, I'm planning on closing this particular position out and looking to re-enter the market on the long side, really no matter what on Monday. If the market's down and I can get closer to the one-month moving average, which has caught us so many times in recent weeks and months, I would like to get that entry. If it means that the market's breaking out to new highs, that means we've had a week-long correction, we've carved out a 50-point range, and you have an immediate move higher, perhaps up towards 53.70 or so. Either way, though, I still think there's a reason to be long and get long here. I just don't want to carry that weekend risk. And so I'm going to avoid it, because I'll be a lot more upset if I don't close it and I'm right about Powell being underpriced, and then I have to roll it on Monday and I see some profits slip away, than I would be if I'm wrong and the market doesn't do anything or goes up, and all I have to do is then just get back in with longer duration. And I may have missed a few points in the move, but at least I have confirmation that the uptrend remains and we've weathered the PCE storm.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's honestly just good mental. You get a three-day weekend knowing you don't have any positions on, you know. Some of the most serene weekends I've had was when I actually didn't have anything on for the weekend. You know,
the Russell's a different story for me, though, because I'm at 33 days here. So this one I will be keeping on. NASDAQ, S&P, I'm going to be closing out today, closer to the end of the day. The Russell, because it's still 33 days, because we're very much in breakout territory, right?
$7 winner.
I think this is worth keeping on because the technicals are there and it's stronger than everything else. And even though yields are moving the way that they are today, the Russell is holding up, which I think bodes well. And the complaint from Waller is that the economic data has been too strong. Strong domestic economy is good for small cap stocks, and it fundamentally undergirds an understandable and digestible rationale why people are rotating out of the winners in tech and buying in some of the lower valued, undervalued names in the Russell, which, by the way, as of the end of last year, retirement accounts had the lowest exposure to the Russell that they've ever had in U.S. history. So this is not loved. It's not crowded. And I think that means that this could be, you know, probably still outperforming. If you don't want to trade stocks, maybe a long Russell short NASDAQ pair trade is what's for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. I'm looking right now at the Russell's volatility. Right now for the 36-day cycle, again, volatility of 20.6. For the Russell, that's really, really low. It's not really, really low, but compared to where we've been in over the last, let's take a look here, over the last 3 months only. There we go. Yes. Over the last, basically since COVID, this is basically the bottom 90th percentile. And Ivy Rank actually, Ivy Rank doesn't tell you that because Ivy Rank just looks at the last year. But since COVID, which is about 4 years at this point, 4 years, dang, 4 years.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I didn't even think about
it. Where did that time go? Wow. I'm just giving the
platform. Literally exactly 4 years, March 28th. That was the COVID, that was the end of the COVID sell-off, or March 27th. But anyway, yeah, so bottom 90th percentile of Russell volatility, I think it still has some juice in it. I mean, I'm looking that, you know, if I think right now, especially because if you look at the Russell, if you put on an April position, April 19th, it is exactly 22 days today. There is a good chance, this is a perfect time, I would even roll the Russell position. Because you have 22 days left, you're going to roll it anyway.
Well, I'm at 33.
Oh, you're in the next one. Okay. Yeah. So, because the futures has a little bit more. But for equities, it's, you know, if you're trading the equity cycles. Yeah. I don't really have anything else to say that besides what we've been saying the last few days. The funny thing is again, it's like as soon as we get scared with the Russell, in the last few weeks, we've still had the equally amount of days where the Russell's outperformed the rest of the market. And again, this is why that dual equity strategy, those small caps and large caps, have been so so nice. Realistically, I mean, I don't think, you know, and it's nice when a call, like one of our, you know, calls works that way. Doesn't always work out that way, but I think that's probably been the best call so far this year. The combination of long ES coupled with low long Russell.
Blending both, and even though the Russell's more volatile than the S&P, the combination of the different strategies straddled across different expirations can help reduce the overall volatility in your portfolio.
Yeah,
funny how that works. So there's a rhyme and reason behind all of it. The Russell still looks good. S&P, NASDAQ, time for them to come off the board. The NASDAQ actually maybe something, I don't know if I put it back on directly because technically it's still in the middle of a range. And yes, the predominant prevailing move is to the upside. I still like long equities exposure, but we'll see what happens. S&P is definitely going back on. I'll think about it through the weekend, and then, you know, I'm probably going to put it back on. Who am I kidding? Right? Why wouldn't I put it back on? Anton, I know it's passive trading, some may call it, but if that's, you know, what the market's calling for, the shoe fits. You gotta take the tool out of the toolkit that calls for that's being called for by this particular environment. And right now it continues to work. So why not? Let's talk about bonds fading these losses here. It's really a story about what's happening at the long end. Because if you look at the short end, that really doesn't occur. That long lower wick here, we're beginning to catch on that EMA envelope again, which is a nice little sign. But volatility just still isn't here. 2.7 IVR. Do people really want to enter a position, one, trying to, you know, get some premium out of this market. But do you want to do that in the middle of a range? You could do a condor. You could do a strangle. Will they pay all that much? Not necessarily. I was looking at DB this morning. If you do an iron condor in here, you're basically risking three to make one. 67% probability of profit. If you're looking at like the 114, 115 short that put spread, and you're shorting the 124, 125 call spread.
Yeah. Yep.
Maybe, I mean, that's the range. And so you could play it, but it takes up a good amount of your, you know, account margin, depending upon your account size. ZN is in a similar boat. ZN is a smaller contract than what you see in ZB. It's having a down day though, although there's that long lower wick. So you can clearly see that there's still buying interest here. I remain long. This is one of the things that I'm comfortable leaving on long because next week is my roll week. It's rate sensitive, so I'm not crazy about it, but I have enough time and it's deep in the money, so I'm just going to let it ride. Otherwise, I see here with an IV rank of 0.4, look, you could do it. You could go out to 57 days. You could throw on an iron condor. You could go to the expected move, right? You give yourself a 62% probability of profit, max profit of 125 against a max loss of 375, risking three to make one. It's not the sexiest thing in the world, but there is a trade there. It may just tie up capital, but that's the setup right now. It's a range-bound market, plain and simple. So you have to treat it range-bound. It's unfortunate that we just don't have any volatility here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like the chart's good. It's just the juice may be not worth the squeeze.
Yeah. I don't think I can stay range-bound in either of the bond products. I just, if you sell, maybe selling a put spread closer to the money is the closest thing I'll go to being range bound, and that's more a bullish strategy. I mean, it'll make money if nothing happens, but I still see the pot odds to the upside. It doesn't make, like, I think that if you're looking at bonds, and let's say we have a huge move to the upside and you're trading a neutral strategy, I just think you're already behind the eight ball if you're going to get, because here's the thing, if bonds break out to the upside, I think you have to get long. I can't imagine anybody saying bonds breaking out, I'm going to sell it as a contrarian play. Like, it just, I mean, maybe some people do. I'm not going to do it. So, you know, and if that happens, go ahead.
Yeah, I got to say, with like the bond risk, I know that we're both bond bulls, and certainly I'm a bond bull for this year. I look at the way commodity prices are trading, though. You know, we have this bottoming basing effect coming into play here. We break out, we pull back to the breakout area, and we immediately bounce and start trading higher again. Oil's breaking out. Natural gas is having a little bit of a rebound today. Obviously, gold and silver continuing to do those gold and silver type things that they've been up to in recent weeks. This is a significant risk for bonds, right? Commodity prices going up tends to be something that hurts the long end of the curve. And so if we can still see a continued rally in the bond market, and we see DBC, commodity prices, broadly speaking, continuing to go up, I think the bond market's going to have a nasty surprise in store for it. And I think at that point in time, if volatility is low, buying an at-the-money put spread makes a great deal of sense. Not even selling a call spread, just an at-the-money put spread.
In DBC or ZB?
In ZB.
Why do you say that? Hold on, why do you say that?
Inflation expectations are embedded in the long end of the curve, and we've gone through periods in this market where what happens on a day-to-day basis in oil prices, for example, doesn't matter until it does. And then oil gets into that area where if prices are up, then yields tend to be higher. And I think ultimately, because oil has been range-bound since last September, we're still okay there. But if you get through 85, 86 in oil prices, you're now all of a sudden at multi-month, multi-going back year highs. The focus point of the market shifts, and all of a sudden it becomes a lot more sensitive to energy, which it has been in the past. It really hasn't been that sensitive to energy these days, right? But we could enter that new paradigm again. And if we do enter that paradigm again, where the focus is on those input costs, that's not going to be good for bonds. Those type of environments typically aren't good for bonds. So I got my eye on these right now. If we get a pullback down towards 117, I would love to get long in ZB. If we continue to rally towards 121 or 122, I think it's something that you have to consider fading in the short term. given how the market. Absolutely. Because then, you know, where's the risk headed right now? This is supposed to be the easy part of the year for getting over inflation. Cleveland Fed has inflation turning higher in the March reading from where it was in February. And Cleveland Fed's been a little bit light on inflation readings recently. The last few months, they've been skewing softer than what the realized readings have been. So I think that they're, you know, if you get a little healthy rally here in bonds, we got to treat these as ranges. And if we move towards the top side of the ranges, we shouldn't look a gift horse in the mouth, and we should absolutely use the opportunity to fade it. There are trades there right now, though. The ranges are very likely. I think the ranges are going to hold, but it looks like we're tilted to the upside right now towards the top side of that range. And I would use that opportunity to fade it. I'm long though. So keep this in mind. Like, I'm long and riding it to resistance so that I can then flip and swing it back to the other side of this channel.
Okay. Well, we'll see. I mean, we'll see. Like I said, it'll be an interesting chat. I think it's one of the few, opposing views we hold here, but that's good. I like
that. No, I want to be bullish longer term. I just think that the market is going through. We've seen over the past several weeks how the market has not correctly wrapped its head around the implications of the Fed's cutting cycle beginning in June, July, what have you. Which is why, even though the market's been in a downtrend this year, we've been able to make money on the long side of the bonds, because the market gets to points where it overreacts. It prices in too much. It prices out too much too quickly. And so as long as those relationships continue to hold, then we're probably getting close to a point where the bond market is a little too rich relative to where the cut odds are and where the balance of risk for those cut odds to travel are. Because we're getting to a point where the only way the Fed can justify cutting in June is if something bad has happened to the economy, because the underlying inflation data is increasingly not there and financial conditions continue to loosen. So I don't know how you can justify it. You're cutting into an economy that's heating up, and that's going to stoke inflationary pressures again. And then you have all those people screaming about the 1970s coming out of the woodwork. And what a better way to scare the heck out of the equity market than thinking you're getting a second wave of inflation a la the Paul Volcker years. But Anton, maybe that's one of the reasons why metals are climbing here, because there has been this reduction in real yields. Real yields continue to fall. Nominal treasury yields, that when you see on your screen, you look up, you know, US 10-year yield, that's your nominal yield. You go to 10YY or 10Y on the platform or 2YY on the platform, those are your nominal yields. And you can subtract inflation expectations from them to get to the real rate. Real rate being the inflation adjusted interest rate. When real rates fall, gold, silver tend to do well, historically speaking, which makes sense. Gold and silver don't have a yield. There's no cash flow. There's no dividend. There's no coupon payment. And so in an environment where real rates are going up, why would you want to hold a shiny rock? When real rates are going down, all of a sudden that shiny rock has some utility for you because there's a limited supply of it and it's perceived to be a store of value. So on a day like today, day like yesterday, when real rates are falling back, we see here gold now closing in on not only all-time highs, but this is going to be a closing high as well for the session. I know vol's high here, 63.1. I'm going to beat the drum that I continue to be here when it comes to gold prices. Technically, this thing looks like it wants higher, and gold does not have the relationship with volatility that equities do. Gold vol tends to go higher as prices move up. So if you're here selling calls in a bullish momentum environment, which MACD trending higher, getting a bullish crossover today, stochastics bullish crossover today, both above their signal lines, above the 513.21 EMA cloud. It's the exact opposite of trying to catch a falling knife, effectively.
Yeah.
The difference is this knife gets sharper as price accelerates because it has a positive relationship with volatility. So I can't, this is like the one place, I say it every day, this is the one place I can't justify selling calls. Not just technically, but because of the relationship between prices and vol here, unlike any other asset class.
100% agree. Listen, we said this yesterday. I said I would never sell naked calls in anything, especially gold. You know, and people who are looking at this like any other asset, looking to short it. I know Tony said this a while ago, like back when it was on the ascent. He's like, I'm looking.
Yeah, he said it like the second week of March, and if you did it then and you held it for a week or two, then you came out clean, but. if you did the typical 45 days in, 21 days out, you'd be on your ass right now.
Yeah, but just like, and that's the thing, you can't, like, it's like trying to short the Nasdaq. Like, sure, you can get a 75 point decline, but more often than not, you're going to get a 200 point rally. So realistically, as a trader, why would you ever take that bet, knowing that the risk is always to the upside, especially with gold, where it continues to accelerate to the upside? It's so like, I mean, listen, think about this. The stock market is going higher right now, yet it has put skew, which means as markets go higher, the perceived risk continues to be to the downside, and calls actually become cheaper. The market isn't going down or has trouble going down more than 75 points a day, and the NASDAQ is an example. Now you're looking at gold, which is operating in a bull market, and it has velocity to the upside. So if something like the NASDAQ, which has put skew, can't seem to find a way down, how could you possibly justify going short an asset that rises in risk as it goes higher in that direction? It's like NASDAQ plus, or it's like Russell plus. It's so, again, you're combining momentum with risk, as opposed to just like, you know, and at least in equity markets, if you go higher, right, the risk of selling calls declines because the incremental move higher maybe is a little smaller because volatility goes down. But with gold, if you have a move higher and then there's another move higher, that move higher will be actually larger than the move that just preceded it. So again, it's like a double whammy effect. So again, you're looking at another update up $30. Again, there's no reason this can't go to 2300 by Monday. I'm not saying it will, but if it does, nobody should be surprised, because looking at this call skew, even looking at like the next week, wait, April 4th is what, till Wednesday, right? Okay, let's go to what's Friday? April 5th. Okay. So again, I mean, just looking at April 5th, right? And I'm not saying this is just context. In a week, you're saying, oh, 2300 gold, really crazy. This is, I mean, it's up a lot now. 2300, this is a 17% chance of happening. Those calls are trading for $5. That's a one standard deviation move. That's very much expected for next week, or within expectation. And then if you see, you know, down the line, you have bids at 20, you know, 2325, 2350. Now, granted, they're small bids, but they're there because the risk is there. It could happen, and it's non-zero, right? So again, it's just warning to all that short gold. All right, I'm done.
I think it's a very appropriate warning. Silver price is picking up here. Again, the last few days, we were finding some support against that one-month moving average. We have going to turn higher here. 34.7 IVR, that started to jump up. Yesterday, it was in the teens. So perhaps there's a little bit more of an opportunity to look to sell some puts down here. Silver options, they're thinly traded. Maybe more appropriate just to mess around with SIL, just the futures, micro futures contract itself. Otherwise, you could always go over to SLV, which we've had some success operating in and out of earlier this year. But silver, gold, look, the technicals here are still pointing to the upside. A bullish falling wedge, or even just a symmetrical triangle, calls for return to the base, which comes up closer to $26.57 an ounce. There may still be some near-term upside momentum here, as that pattern has yet to be completed. So gold's looking good. If silver's looking good, that probably means interest rates are going to chop around or move lower from here, which also then caters to the mindset that we may be looking at a range bound, you know, ZN or ZB for the near future, a little bit up, a little bit of down, but if they're staying in the same range, gold, silver, probably unbothered by it. Energy here, on the other hand, showing signs that it wants to continue to trade in directional bias as well. Crude shaking off what was a few days of frustration, as it were. Yesterday, I got very lucky, Anton. I was looking at this chart. I was at 22 days to expiration. We were sitting in right around $81.45 a barrel. And I said, you know what? I'm going to take this off. I don't really like the fact that vol's been crushed, right? I'm doing the iron condor. I'm short the call spread. I'm short the put spread. Vol's come back in, which is wonderful for me. We've moved up a little bit in price, but we're still within the range. I'm just going to get out. I don't really love this market anymore. It was so much more appealing back in December and January when you have, like, you know, in like the first percentile of net longs ever, or like the zero percentile, you move to an all-time low in terms of net longs historically. prices have come down, OPEC this, supply that, China this. There was so much negativity there. We were clearly at a sentiment extreme. Now, is there geopolitical risk in here? Is this a story about growth? Is this because Ukraine's been bombing Russian refineries? I don't know. I actually don't feel like I have any edge right now. And so somewhat freeing to be out of a crude position where increasingly while I was holding, I'm saying, yeah, like I hopefully this works out because I don't really feel like there's a good rationale anymore. The technicals look like it could break. And this is the chart I'm most worried about for treasuries. You get through 84, 85 here, all of a sudden, this is a new world for crude that we haven't seen in quite some time. And then that's when the treasury market may go to say, oh, gas prices are going back up. Inflation's going back up. That's not good. We need to pay more attention to this story because we've been ignoring it for so long.
I don't know. This may be a hot take, but if you have inflation expectations seem to rise a little bit, I think bonds may have a little bit of sell-off, but I don't think it'll be anything like 2022. I don't think it'll
No, I don't think so either.
Like, and again, I think even with that, I think that's the main reason why, like, I, you know, even with that worst case scenario, that stuff's been priced in. So I don't know why I went back to ZB. It's just one of the mentions because that's what I was thinking about. When it comes
but to that's why I said, like, if we can get a pullback, if I can get out of my long bond position and fade it a little bit higher from here and then get back in long ZB at like 117, 118,
yeah,
I will be a very happy camper if I can get long ZB at 117, 118 again.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. When it comes to crude, volatility for the April cycle sitting at 25%. That is a far cry from what we saw earlier last year, like middle of last year. We saw crude volatility hovering around, you know, mid 30s, even closer to 40. You know, crude is becoming similar to the Russell in terms of volatility. And, you know, again, IB rank of 7. I don't know. I don't really think there's a trade here for me.
I don't think there's a trade here either. I'm just looking at the weekly chart here. I'm just thinking about, you know, how the market's behaved and how it treats oil when it's a problem for bonds. You can go back to 2022 when oil was trading north of 85 a barrel and everyone was pointing to oil as a huge problem for bonds, right? Inflation expectations going up. The Fed's going to have to hike. Can the Fed hike to even offset what Russia's doing? Oil was a problem for bonds again in the fall, in September, right? You know, bonds don't bottom out until you get through into October. And it's in part because oil prices have shot up. And when do we see bonds begin to bottom? Officially, end of the month of October, oil breaks back below 85 a barrel. So this is kind of why I'm watching this oil chart here. I don't necessarily think there's a trade there right now. Although, you know, much longer term, you look at the continuous contract, I could definitely see why people maybe thinking that this is a longer term bullish chart. And I'm not going to dismiss that either. But you get through this 85 area, all of a sudden, Anton, oil over here feels a lot different than oil over here. That downtrend that's been in place since March 2022 all of a sudden breaks. And that's why I just have this itch in the back of my head, like that spider sense, you know, that you build up from being in the markets for a while when something unrelated to equities. When was the last time equity markets cared about oil? Yeah. Not since the war started, right?
Right.
So there are periods of time when the market completely cares and there's times when the market does not care at all. We've been going through one of the not care at all times, even though oil's up, you know, $10+ from its lows. This could become an issue for the market. And so I don't want to ignore that. The commodity story is not over yet. That's why I really like DBC still. I think like one of the trades I might put on Anton is long DBC, short triple Qs, and then continue to trade NASDAQ on the long side, trade S&P on the long side, right? And that way it's a little bit of a hedge in there in case this does become a real problem.
It's possible. How do you get a relationship between that though? I mean, I think that maybe a little bit of a stretch, don't you think? You know, I mean,
maybe
you're basically expecting the correlation to materialize.
Yes. I'm fully, yes, that is the expectation. I think there is a regime shift in terms of what the focal point of attention is if oil gets to $85 a barrel and it breaks the downtrend from the highs that you have in from March 2022.
Okay.
I think that that's one of those narrative changing events in the market where you then look back in hindsight, oh yeah, no wonder we started to care about this because oil went from 85 up to above 90. And then all of a sudden we're thinking about $100 a barrel again. And you get those dumb cryons on CNBC. So.
What did you call them? Dumb cryons?
Yeah, cryons. That's what those tickers are called at the bottom of a news screen. Cryons. C-H-R-Y-O-N. Or C-H-Y-R-O-N, cryon. Euro weakest, loony strongest here on this Thursday as we wind down the week. Tomorrow morning, there's a slew of European inflation data due out from Spain and France and Italy. So if you're holding the euro, I suppose that's something to be worried about. Otherwise, it's a dry calendar. The euro has been weakening here in recent days, of course, as yields have started to tick back higher. It's losing its uptrend. Depending upon where you look, you're going to see a different story here. It's a 20.3 IVR, though, in the euro. In the Canadian dollar, which is outperforming the US dollar today as well, it's a 21.7 IVR. Anton, where I have a position in the Australian dollar, 43.3 still. I sold a strangle here because the vol was up in the 50s for the IVR yesterday. We're basically right around the same prices. As long as we don't break through the lows from where we were. Let's go back to this weekly chart. Yeah, we didn't even go daily. Yeah, there we go. Okay. As long as we stay above the yearly low and we don't break above the highs that we had on January 16th, I think it's good. But currency has some vol back in it, right? And that's not something you've seen often in the past year or two. And I would encourage people to go over there and take a look at it because it's something unrelated to equities and it's been very rate sensitive. So if the bonds are too big for you, for example, trading in the currencies, they're actually more manageable position sizes. If you're looking at a condor or a put spread, selling a put spread, for example, more approachable for smaller account sizes. Anton, that's all the time we have for today and for this week on Futures Power Hour. So let's talk about what's next on the calendar. Not that any of you can trade it because the futures market is closed tomorrow for Good Friday. It closes today at 5 p.m. Eastern. Then it reopens on Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern. So keep that in mind when you're balancing your risk heading into this 3 days off. Good Friday, Easter Sunday for those who celebrate. Enjoy the weekend. For those who don't celebrate, enjoy the weekend. PCE index, the Fed's preferred gauge of inflation. Tomorrow morning, 8:30 a.m. Eastern, 7:30 a.m. Central Time. Fed Chair Powell speaking 3 hours later. Get your popcorn out. Maybe we get a big gap coming out of this holiday. Anton, as we do at the end of every one of these shows, we like to do a brief bit of education. Today, we're talking about types of margin. Head over to tastylive.com, top end, or learn beginner futures. Get past this picture of the man himself, Anton Kulikov, for this beginner futures course put together by the fine folks on the Tasty Live research team. Initial margin is the initial amount of capital required in your account to deploy a given trade. Futures exchanges use proprietary methods for calculating initial margin, which takes into account the product being traded, the historical volatility, and of course, the current trading environment. Maintenance margin is the amount of capital a trader needs to maintain in your account to keep the position. And if you fall below the maintenance level, you get a margin call where you have to top up your account or the position gets closed. So don't get margin called. To learn more, go to tastylive.com, top banner, learn beginner futures, or simply click the link here on the bottom of this slide. It will take you there directly. Anton, it was a successful week. We got through the week, you and me together, all 4 days. No one was injured. No feelings were hurt.
Well, maybe up until now. So did you know, apparently, I just found out the DJT headquarters 21 minutes from me.
DJT.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
It's not a futures. There was a great comment I saw on Reddit yesterday on Wall Street Bets. There are Waffle House locations that have more revenue in a given month than Truth Social had all of last year, which is not a knock on the company. It's effectively a startup. But even if you were to apply startup-like valuations to it, maybe it should have a market cap somewhere around $75 to $150 million. You give it a 25 to 50 times multiple on top of the $3 million of earnings. I think David Sachs showed this math for how he would value a startup. And this thing is trading at what? $4 billion market cap now? $3 billion market cap? So it's a meme stock.
And I think if I'm looking at the map, this is like a strip mall in the middle of nowhere. I'm just saying, funny.
That's on brand. That makes
on brand, sense. Very on brand.
That makes complete sense.
I've driven by that place many times. It's like a construction place.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. Well, see, I have a small put that I own in it that's deep out of the money, just in case the market wakes up to its senses. Otherwise, max loss is like $100. It was $1. And we'll see what happens. But other than that, Anton, we are done here for this week on Futures Power Hour. We'll be back on Monday, same time, same place, as always, every Monday through Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 Central Time here on Tasty Live. For Anton Kulikov, who was a great co-host this week, and he filled in for me all of last week. Big hats off to him. Great job, Anton. Good for you. I've been Chris Vecchio. Good luck trading the rest of today. Hope you have a healthy, happy weekend with your family. If you're not celebrating Easter, well, I have a good weekend anyway. See you soon.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live, Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live, Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered